Yeah.
Whatever. Okay. All right. We all set here? You got everything on rolling? I'm looking at my levels there. They're looking good. They're looking fine. They're bouncing in the good spot. So keep them there, Mr. Reggie, and we will commence. How's that for a word? All right. Very good. I'll give you the three S's, the countdown. You give me the music, and I'll give you a good podcast. How's that? That's my promise. Let's sure that at least on this end we make good on that. What they think out there, that's another subject. That's up for interpretation. All we can do is create, and then the audience decides, right? Okay. Very good. Let's get going here. I got a fun little story to tell. All right. You ready? Three S's. Star, smile, strong. Let's go. You all set? I'm set. All right. I mean business today. Okay, ready? 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com. Don't forget, we are also found wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. It only makes sense. Favorite podcast? Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. They're one in the same. Also, don't forget that you have a responsibility as a listener to this podcast to not just listen, not just have a good time, not just brighten your day, but brighten other people's days. So send a message, send a link, send a reason to your friends, your family, your significant others, anyone in your sphere of socializing, whether it's socially distanced or right next to you. Tell them that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. It's yours and it should be theirs. Your efforts, your devotion, and your loyalty is much, 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 much appreciated. Also, if you like what you hear, don't forget, you go to WGNRadio.com, go to the podcast section, hit the prompt for this podcast, and you will find all previous 243 episodes. Logic would then lead you to the conclusion that you are listening to episode 244. Welcome aboard. So, for this episode, I find that a lot of podcast listeners, to this podcast at least, I don't know about other podcasts, don't really care, they enjoy when I tell my have-to-call-the-guy stories. I've been doing this for quite a long time, dating back to my days on the radio every day, of calling the guy. I've said many times, if you've listened with any regularity, I am not the most handy of all people. So I try to be a DIYer, not a DUI. Whoa, there's a Freudian slip. No, I do not have any DUIs. No, please. I have certainly tried hard not to be a DUIer. That's for damn sure. And I have succeeded. Thank you very much. Wow. No, a DYIer, a do-it-yourselfer, in the last 20 years, if not longer, maybe even 30 years, you know, the big trend has been to do it yourself. With all these shows on, the home HGTV and all this, and Trading Spaces, and all these do-it-yourself shows, dating even back to, you know, on PBS. Remember the what was that? The Yankee Workshop or something like that. Bob Vila, remember him? So there's Lou Manfredini, obviously, on WGN, and things like that. So the do-it-yourself craze, the do-it-yourself movement, if you will, has been going on for quite a few years, several decades at least. And I certainly, as a is a 20-something and newly married, fell into that, right? You get your first apartment and, your first house and, you want to sort of see if you can DIY, do it yourself, right? Makes you feel good. You get to show off in front of your new spouse if you're either cohabitating or married, right? Hey, well, yeah, I'll fix that, honey. I think being a DIYer, certainly you can learn. But I think, like everything else, it does take those 10,000 hours. And unless you were really schooled at it and apprenticed to it at a young age, and you got a knack for it, and then as you grew into adulthood, you continued your experience and your education on how to do new things. But I really think that to really do things like that well is an art. It is a skill. As I've said many times, I have great respect for tradesmen, whether it's plumbers, carpenters, you name it, whatever it is that the tradesmen can do. I have great respect for what you or they do, because I can do a few things. I'm proud of myself. Over the last week or so, over a day, we have a small little hallway that leads down to our basement, and I repainted that. It needed a nice fresh coat. It had been a while. And so I painted that, felt good about that. Painted the walls. It was kind of a cramped. It wasn't easy, actually. It was kind of a cramped and circular with a weird shaped ceiling to it as it led down to the basement. So it wasn't as easy. There was one point where I thought, I'm either going to finish this or I'm going to paralyze myself, because there was this one far corner that I could not reach just standing on the steps. It was too high. And so I needed to, I needed to get up, and I didn't, the stair that was closest to that was on the turn of where the stair started at the it's sort of a semicircular staircase that goes down to our basement. It's not just a straight shot, which would be very nice and very easy. Of course, nothing in my world is that easy. So after the second or third stair, the stair starts to turn. And I look at my basement and I say, why couldn't you have just made that a straight shot down? I don't know why they had to make this turn and complicate it for a lot of things for the future, but they did. And one of the complications was, if you're painting this little wall around this to get to the top of it in the far corner away from this, as the stairs lead away from this little wall at the top of the stair, it's almost impossible unless you're about 6'7" to paint it without some kind of a structure, a ladder, or some kind of a boost. And yet, a ladder certainly won't, you can't put a ladder on there. Now I'm thinking, no, you really, because the way the stair is, it's curving right there. So you can't really lay it down there, any kind of a ladder. You can't open it. You can maybe lay the ladder against the ceiling or the wall, but all of the legs of the ladder won't stay there because of the way the stair turns, the way it shifts. So I had to get on a makeshift little stool that only had like half of it on the stair, and I had to lean I wish I had a picture of this. I had to lean against a door jamb, put my weight against to the front of this stool that I was on, so that the part of the leg that was not on the stair would not come into play. And then in the midst of all that, with my left hand, so right hand on the door jamb, weight against the front of this stool near the wall, and then with my left hand, and I'm right-handed, and I'm not all that ambidextrous, So with that, I had to get the paint first and then try to, you know, paint the wall and the ceiling that where the two meet there, and then get the roller. Oy. I said, wow, I could easily fall backward here, and that could be it. And yet, you know, to finish the job, I did do it. Thankfully, I'm here to talk about it. But do you ever put yourself in those situations where you know that it's not just painting or something, or even any kind of do-it-yourself project, but just you put yourself in a dangerous situation, and you know it's dangerous, and you still do it, and it defies logic. Why do we do that? And hopefully, thankfully, for the most part, there's enough. The danger is not exceeding the safety side, and we come out, even though there is a danger aspect to it. But that's not always the case. You read these stories about people that go hiking or something, and they fall off the ledge, and they have that same kind of security, or that same sense of safety, like, oh, this will be fine, I'll be fine, and it isn't. I was actually picturing myself, that's how weird this was, I was actually picturing myself falling off this behind, and I was looking at that, I said, well, if I fall, I'm going to hit my back on one of those stairs, and I'll probably break my, that's how I'm always, you know, looking at the worst. But thankfully, I did it, and it looks good, and it looks fine. So I'm proud of the fact that I painted this, and we did the stairs and the railing, and so it's got a nice fresh coat. It needed it. It hasn't been done for about 10 years or so, so it needed it. But it was a little scary, I must say, right out of the box when I looked at that corner. I'm like, I couldn't just leave it. Because there was a definite difference between the new coat and the old coat. And so I had to do it. And I had to put myself at risk to do a good job. And so that's me. I'm all in, right? I almost fell out, but you know. But anyway, so I can paint. I do that pretty good. Of course, not as good as a professional painter, and I don't pretend to that, especially when it comes to the edges and all that real fine finery. I've mentioned this before. I've got a friend of mine who's a professional painter, and my gosh, he doesn't even use tape. I mentioned tape to him, like, you know, the blue tape that you use for paint, and he just kind of shrugs, like, wow, amateur hour. And I've seen him in action. One day, we were once again very ambitious. This was probably 10 years or so ago, and we decided to paint our dining room. And it's an older house, and so it's got moldings, not only at the top, like the crown moldings on those ceilings and on the and by the floor, but also moldings in the middle of the walls, you know, those kind of older houses that have those moldings. And so we were able to paint, you know, two-toned. Obviously, the moldings were one color, the walls were the other. But the lines just were not crisp and sharp, you know, around those moldings. And my gosh, my friend came over, and I said, we've done the hard work. If you can just kind of do the finer tune-ups on this now. We've done the major stuff, and it looks good, but it's just, you know, it doesn't look crisp. It needs tight, crisp lines around those moldings, and because they're all over the room. And he came with a brush. That's all he came. We had the paint for him, right? I'm assuming he's going to come with all these gizmos and all these, you know, kind of tools to make sure that, you know, lines are straight and he knows how to do it. And he came with one brush. I kid you not. One brush. Every artist needs good equipment. And he had a great brush. And that's all he needed, his great brush and his talent and his years of experience. And he just painted these straight lines, and I was in awe. I really was. So I can do a good paint job, but then when it comes to the, I mean, I, you know, we use the tape and it looks fine, but it, when I saw him, I was like, this is a master and an artist at work. So I could paint. I've done some other little things, but the big stuff, I've tried a few of the big things, and either they've worked or they haven't, and I'm like, you know what? So as I've said many times on this podcast and on the radio, I have relinquished any ego involved, and I have just resigned to the fact that I need to call the guy. For many years, my phrase was, isn't there a guy that does this? That was my desperate or my frustrated saying when I was way too far into and way over my head on a do-it-yourself project. And while I was doing this, and maybe I was even doing okay, but it was just taking too long, and it was just, you know, much more than I expected, because every job is much more than you expect, and no two houses are the same, and no two jobs are the same. And as you know, when you call any kind of a workman or a tradesman there, they can only give you an estimate, but then when they start working, you know, every house is different, or every sink is different, every toilet is different, and there's no such thing as, well, this is exactly the way it's going to work. So there's always a lot of improvisation. Or, didn't expect to see this. The difference is that they know how to adjust to those surprises. And we laymen, we only follow the directions of what we are shown. And when there is some kind of a change in the scenario or the situation that you have, then we don't know how to make those fine-tuned detours. Well, we'll just have to do this instead of that. Well, we don't know about those, right? So that's where the tradesmen and the pros come in. And I dealt with enough of those. Well, now what's this? And now what do I do? And now I'm halfway into this thing. It's too late to turn back. And so then you got to call the guy. So my first phrase in the frustration or whatever, just the impatience of a project like this, was, isn't there a guy that does this? And then it developed or evolved into, that was because I was doing it. As I was doing it, I would say, isn't there a guy that does this? As I was more honest with myself, as I said before, put my ego away and just simply said, you know what, I'd rather pay a little extra more, know that it's done, know that it's done correctly, and know that if it's something wrong, I have someone to call. Because if I do it wrong, I'm paying for it, and then if it goes wrong, I have to try to refix it myself. I have no other option. It's to say, hey, you know, you fix this and it doesn't work anymore. So I just call the guy. That's become my mantra. And I'm proud to say that when I call the guy, as expected, the job gets done correctly. And I don't have to worry about that specific little project or problem anymore. And wow, is that a great peace of mind. So from my mind, yes, I've probably spent a lot more than I should have or could have if I've done it myself, but I can't do it myself. So it's the cost of doing business. What can I say? I don't really have a huge network of friends that are tradesmen that I can call in terms of, oh, Tom's an electrician, or Frank's a painter, or this guy's a drywall. I don't really have that kind of circle of friends who are all tradesmen. I'm that's just not my sphere. So that's what I have to do. That's my reality. So, but like I said, painting, I can do a little. What else could I do? I've talked about this one time. I can't believe it. I actually did install a light fixture in our first home about 25 years ago. And I couldn't believe it worked, first of all. That was A. Couldn't believe I actually did it correctly. But at the same time, I still didn't trust myself. And for the 3 years we were in that house, every time I turned on the kitchen light, which is the fixture I installed, I was expecting it to blow up. And I'm not even exaggerating. Every time I turned that light on, I would look at it. I was waiting for a spark. And I can't believe it never sparked. I must have done it correctly. But I couldn't believe that I did it correctly. Electricity is very serious, right? It could be very dangerous. But once again, when you're younger and you're in this kind of do-it-yourself mode, you say, oh, yeah, I'll buy the fixture and put it up. And they even say, oh, this is easy to install. There's no such thing as easy to install, all right? If you've ever done that, you know that that's true. I can put furniture together. Just did that recently, actually. My wife got a new chair for her her desk. And I put that together, even put the legs together on her desk. So I can do that. I can use the Allen wrench. I can follow those directions pretty well. I can put together that. We haven't really bought a lot of IKEA stuff, but I'm okay with that. I can do that. I can paint. As I said, I've painted a lot of stuff around the house and the garage and things like that. But when it gets to some of the heavy lifting stuff, you know, I have done the little flapper chain in the toilet, you know, like, you know, so that your the little plunger thing goes down when you flush your toilet. I've done that, which leads to my discussion today. Now, plumbing, once again, that's another thing. You know, I've done a few things with, you know, trying to get, you know, clogs out. But I've never taken the pipes apart. No. Won't do that. The funny thing is, I don't know how it is with you, if you own a home or if you have any kind of experience with this stuff. But it seems as if, for whatever reason, when my wife and I got married, we were destined, for whatever reason, to be the water people. We have been married now 30 years, and this is our second home, and we had a condominium when we first got married. And we have all, with every one of our domiciles, if you will, we have had some kind of water problem. We just have water follow us. You know how water seeks its level? Water seeks us. Water seems to find us. If we've had any major ongoing home problem, it's involved water, plumbing, leaks, whatever. When we first got married, we had a condominium. We were on the top floor of a three-story condominium. I went out to play hockey one Sunday morning. I came home and my wife, I come in, I'm all tired and sweaty, and I walk in and we hadn't even been there that long, maybe, you know, 2 or 3 months. My wife goes, oh my God, come into the bedroom. You have to see this. I don't know what to do. And in the corner where two walls met and near the ceiling, at the top of the ceiling, there was this giant ball of water that was hanging over our dresser. So we moved the dresser, and it was literally, what happened was there was water that the paint of the ceiling was holding like a balloon, this water that had somehow began to leak into our ceiling, and who knows what the heck it is. So I call up the condo place, and the guy comes out and he says, oh, that's an ice dam. You have an ice dam. There must be an ice dam outside. I don't know what the heck an ice dam is. I never knew what it was. I know now. He explained it. Yeah, you know, popped the paint bubble. The water comes out. The ice dam was gone. It's one of these freak of natures, the way the ice melts on your roof. If there's a leak, or who knows, the water once again finds its way in there and blah, blah, blah. So right off the bat, when we got married, we started off with an ice dam, and things have only progressed. So between toilet troubles and, as I said, leaks and plumbing and sinks and all this, it's always we have water. Water seems to follow us. At our first home, our utility room was attached to the garage right outside the kitchen. So it was very, very convenient, but also it was outside. It faced the wall of the room was the outside. It wasn't like down in a basement, you know, it was outside, and I don't guess the wall wasn't all that thick. Well, we had a real bad deep freeze for about a week here in the Chicago area. And it was just the wife, you know, my wife and myself. So we, it's like we, not like we wash clothes every day. We have 20 kids. We're always washing clothes. And so in between the time when, before the cold spell hit, and then the cold spell was in full effect, we hadn't washed clothes. So my, you know, we're not thinking about this at all, right? So my wife, you know, runs the washing machine, and all of a sudden, you know, one of the pipes in our utility room was right next to this, to the wall, which was, I guess, close to the, it was not a thick wall, I guess, and it was and it froze. So we had a busted pipe. It, you know, it's just spitting out water. So turn off the pipe there, and we, you know, we couldn't use the thing, and then a guy had to come out and fix the busted pipe, and oh. So water has just followed us. And then the water, you know, from that pipe when we first discovered it, you know, it was starting to leak down the wall into the basement. And so all of a sudden I go down to the basement. Now there's this water dripping down the wall from upstairs. And I don't, and I'm, you know, I'm new homeowner, and I'm not, like I said, I'm not this putterer guy. And so now I have to find the main water valve. And I'm like an episode from the Honeymooners with the water valve. Turn it toward the wall. What wall? There's four walls. I don't even know where the main water, you know, wheel is. And then I found it, obviously turned it off, but oh my God, was I freaking out. Oh, I'll never forget the fear and the hysteria that was in my mind. Cause I really didn't, when I saw this water dripping down the wall, I didn't know what the hell to do. And then I'm like, okay, wait a minute. And then I came to my senses, and I'm like, I got to shut the water main off here, right? Somewhere in the house. But where is it? You know, they may have showed that to me when we first bought the house, but I'm more worried about, you know, cool posters and cool stuff to decorate the house. I don't know about all the inner workings. That's not where my brain is. So my message to you youngsters out there, you know, when you buy a house, or not even your old anything, when you first buy a house or your new place, you know, yes, look at all the aesthetics. Oh, what a great bedroom. Oh, what a great this. But when you decide to buy the house, or if you're deciding to buy the house, you do have to click into the homeowner mode too, not just the, oh, what a beautiful space this is. Not just the interior decorator side. Oh, I can put my this here, and won't this be great? And oh, we can have breakfast in this nook, and all these architectural digest, you know, fantasies we have when we look at a new place to live. There is something to be said for the homeowner, the nuts and bolts, how the hell this place is built, and how the heck this place works. And you do need to, where is your circuit breaker or your fuse box, and where is the main water, and where are those things, and how do those work, and where's the hot water heater, and what's it connected to, and how old is it? That stuff is the boring and non-glamorous stuff about being a homeowner. But it's more important than, oh, I love the view. Or, oh, I love the way the sun comes in this room in the morning. That's great. But if you ever had a condo or a home, you know that you also need to be prepared for when things go wrong, because they will. And, you know, if you don't rent, you got to take care of them. There's nobody to call. There's no custodian. There's no association. That's your job. So when that water was dripping down the side of the walls in the basement, I had no one to call. I couldn't call Ghostbusters. I was hoping to call, you know, Pipe Busters or Clog Busters. But then, okay, then what needed to be done clicked in, and then I thankfully found it and averted you know, what could have been a catastrophe of letting this water continue to drip. So thankfully I thought of that quickly. But so word to the wise. Whether you're a longtime homeowner or first one, just realize, yes, all those other cool things, how many bedrooms, and where's the, you know, where's the, you know, the hookup for this? And, oh, I could put, my, you know, all your decorating ideas. That's great. That's what first attracts you in the views. That's what attracts you to a home. But just as important is how well that home is made, and you having the knowledge of where those important devices and those important power sources, whether it's electricity, water, where those sources are in your home. Because you eventually will have to know them and deal with them. So that's my little message to you on that front. So, so we are the water people. The water follows us. We have come to accept we are the water people, and we deal with things accordingly. So, as I said last year around this time, right at the beginning of the COVID situation, you would hope there was at the beginning, if you remember, you know, that we didn't know how this thing was spreading, and you were worried about this COVID being on surfaces and everything, you know, and, you know, you're quarantining and just stay with the people, you know, the same rules that we're still supposed to be abiding by today. But, you know, a year ago, we were much more, diligent because we didn't know what the heck we were facing. And so the idea of even a stranger coming to your home was kind of a scary idea right off the bat. And as I said, in our case, instead of, you know, it's just my wife and I, so it would be easy to quarantine, right? Well, we had about two or three different things where we had to call the guy, which was kind of a stressful situation. A stranger coming to your home, you're wearing masks, they're touching things, you know, you're all paranoid, but we got through that. So now here we are. And so for the most part, once we got through that little stretch where things were kind of breaking, it's been, you know, relatively calm, which is nice, you know. So just last Saturday, we were just about to sit down to eat. And this is how funny you can just trace things. You just trace things back to their origins. And when you realize how, at the time you started this long little path to where you wind up, you were completely oblivious to any possibilities of where you started would lead you to where you're at now. And let me explain this, okay? So, we go to the grocery store on Saturday, and we're going to get some shrimp, right? Now, some cold shrimp, you know, just have a little cocktail sauce and just have a little, you know, cold shrimp, peel and eat shrimp. Now, we've always gotten the peel and eat shrimp, and we've boiled it, and, you know, hopefully it's deveined. We did this on Christmas Eve, and you know, it was Christmas or whatever. I said, you know what, I don't feel like going through all the peeling and the deveining and all that stuff. You know, I just, you know, it's Christmas. It costs more to get the, you know, the peeled and cooked shrimp, right? It costs probably twice as much. But they've done the work for you, right? So that's part, once again, that's the cost of doing business. With getting the boiled and already peeled and deveined shrimp that's just ready to go, that's the same as calling the guy, right? The guy came and peeled the shrimp and deveined it and cooked it the right way. And then you come along and all you do is use it. So I guess, you know, buying the prepared, you know, already cold shrimp that's already been deveined and shelled and boiled and it's ready to go. It's just being chilled. It's all ready to go. That's the same, I guess, as calling the guy. The pro was involved, and you come with the finished product. You pay a little extra, but you pay for the convenience and the fact that it's been done for you. And done correctly, right? So I didn't even think about that, but that's really true. Getting the shelled cleaned out and cooked shrimp is the same is the difference and the same as the same thing as if I'm going to do it. It's, you know, the peel and eat shrimp is a do-it-yourself project, and the boiled, deshelled, deveined shrimp is the call the guy. I should have known. I'm a call the guy guy. At Christmas time, I was the call the guy guy in terms of the shrimp. I said, let's just get the shrimp. We'll pay a little extra. It's Christmas. I don't feel like going through all this stuff. Let's just get the shrimp. And it was delicious. It was easy. It was convenient. And as I was eating it and everything, I'd even think about how much I paid, right? Because it was the holiday, and so you indulge. Now it's 2 or 3 weeks later, and now you're out of that sentimental, misty-eyed holiday feeling, and now you get back to, well, you know, wait. I mean, this one shrimp is $19.99 a pound. This other one is $8.99 a pound. So you know what? We can throw it in a pot and boil it, and you know, we can deshell it ourselves for, you know, to save an extra, you know, $12 a pound. We're only going to get a pound anyway, so we're going to save $12 here. Right? That's pretty good. And all that we're being asked to do is take some shells off of a piece of shrimp. I mean, come on. So we're going to get the peeled, you know, the nice, you know, call the guy shrimp. But then, you know, the DIY guy clicked in for some reason, and I said, "No, let's get the other one." Because it really is a quite a bit of a price difference. And in my view, the effort involved really wasn't worth that extra money when it's not a holiday. So we went for the $8.99. Shrimps look good. Everything fine. So now we get home, and my wife's taking the shrimp out. We're going to have it. And she goes, "Oh, you know, when the guy was putting the shrimp in the bag to weigh it, I saw him mistakenly while he was grabbing this shrimp with his gloves on." Yes. He grabbed a raw shrimp that was right next to this, that was not in a shell. And I saw it, and I was going to tell him, but, you know, what was the difference, right? Who cares? And I didn't want to, you know, he had them in the bag already by the time he was wrapping it up. But I did see him do that. I didn't know if it got in the bag or not, and I didn't want to bother him. You know how we get, we don't want to, you know, cause a scene, right? I don't know why this would have caused a scene, but she didn't want to do it. So she's like, "Oh, well, here's a raw shrimp." And so I said, "Well, you know, just, okay, why don't you just throw it out? It's not even that big, and because we've got these other ones that are already cooked. So what are we going to do? We're going to boil water for one shrimp?" So I said, "You know, just throw it out. It's not even that big, and, you know, it's just a little shrimp. I mean, it's in the title, right? It's a shrimp. It's shrimpy." So she goes to the bathroom because, you know, I don't want to throw it out because it's going to smell. So I said, "Well, you know, I don't want to put it in the garbage disposal. I said, just put it in the toilet. It's, you know, it's small enough." She puts it in the toilet. She goes to flush the toilet. And when she pushes down the lever, the toilet's not flushing. Now, I'm in the living room, and she goes, "There's something wrong with the toilet." And I'm like, "What? I mean, did we just use this toilet? I mean, sometime today, I would assume we use this toilet, right? Because it's in the evening already. We've been downstairs for the most of the day. I'm sure we use this toilet. What could be wrong with it? It just worked." So of course, I have to check it. Like, she can't tell that it's not flushing, right? You can either tell whether the toilet's flushing or not, right? But I didn't trust her diagnosis. So Joe, you know, Jim the plumber, you know, I'll fix it. Oh, yeah. Yeah, like I could tell anything more than she can. So I click the thing. What the heck's going on? So now we are all set to eat. You know, we've already got the table in the living room set up. We've got the plates. We've got the bowl for the shrimp. We've got the little bowl for the for the shells because we have to peel these, right? We're all set to go, and then she decides to throw the shrimp out, and now we have this toilet problem. Well, if you've listened to this podcast for any period of time or listened to me at all, you know that, okay, when there's something wrong, I need to fix it. I can't just say, okay, we'll leave until after we eat. So I now I'm in toilet mode. I was very hungry and very looking forward to this shrimp dinner. And suddenly this toilet thing now has ruined, it's put a monkey wrench, no pun intended, into my whole day here. You know, how dare you ruin when everything just seems to be going nice. And once again, it's a water-related problem. Water follows us. So, you know, we've got stuff. You know, I'm going to take the lid off the toilet tank, and we've got stuff on there, you know, a few little decorations and a picture, and, you know, some. So, okay, take that stuff off, and I take the lid, which is, you know, we have an older home. We have the original toilet, or if not, this toilet's got to be 50, 60 years old. Our home is a lot older than that. So I take the heavy lid. I mean, this toilet is like a tank, right? I mean, this is back when they knew how to make toilets. So I take the lid off, which has to weigh at least 10 or 15 pounds, if not more. It's a heavy lid. And I put it, because I'm in a rush, right? I want to see what the hell is going on in my toilet here. So I take the lid and I put it down in the little spot, that little area that sits between where the tank is and where your toilet seat fastener is. You know, that little spot there usually has the name of the toilet in it, like, you know, Cohen, Kohler or Moen, whatever, American Standard. You know, that's where they print the name of the toilet usually, in that little space between where the tank is and where the toilet seat begins, and where the fasteners for the toilet seat is. There's a little space there usually, a little white space or whatever your toilet is, but a little space where the name is. Well, if I put the toilet lid on its side, it fit right in that little space. Now, as you know, that space is not very wide or long. It was wide enough for me to put the lid on sideways. But, you know, both sides of the lid are now kind of dangling because it's not a very long piece. It's that little piece that connects the toilet basin to the tank. But it was sitting on there, and it seemed to be fine, but it was still a little precarious, right? So I get in there, and I look, and as I said, this is an old toilet. So that little flapper thing that closes the little ball, you know, that closes after you flush your toilet, that little ball thing closes, and that's how your tank fills up again after it opens. That ball opens, the water goes down, that's how your toilet flushes. And then when the lever goes down, that ball falls back there, and that's how the tank fills up with water again. Listen to me, like I know what I'm talking about. But I have to know this because I water follows me. So I know the inner workings of a toilet. I may not know exactly how it works or how to fix it, but I've learned enough because I've been in there enough because I've had toilet problems. I've had to roll up my sleeve, literally, and get into the toilet. I at least know the junk inside and why and how it works or why it works. How it works, I don't really know all that, but I know why it works and what it does. And I might not know how to fix it, but I certainly, at least I get the general gist of it. So when I look, the reason why the lever was just limp was that the flapper chain broke. But in our toilet, it's so old, we don't even have a flapper chain. We don't have a chain. We have a wire that was connected to the flapper, to that ball. And I guess over time, this toilet is so old that over time, and that metal sitting in the toilet water, with, you know, there's all minerals and lime and all that stuff, it eats away. And I guess with the repeated flushings of how many decades, that little piece just got weakened and it broke. So how ironic that, you know, The last time someone used it, it worked fine, and it finished a flush. But, you know, you can't see in your tank. It, you know, it's not like a fish tank. And so that whoever did that last flush, they had the last flush of that little flapper. And we didn't know that until we had to throw this shrimp out right before we were going to eat. So right now, I'm blaming the guy who put the raw shrimp in there. Because if he doesn't put the raw shrimp in there, then my wife doesn't go to throw it out at that minute. And we go and eat. And maybe the next time we come to use that toilet, we now discover this. But it's after this, and the time sequence, and in that moment now is different. Because every moment is different, right? Regardless of what Back to the Future says. So what happens in this moment, even if you're in the same situation, would be different 3 hours later. It's a different time, different result, different reality, different result. But in the current reality, if the guy doesn't put the raw shrimp in with our other shrimp, then my wife doesn't go to throw it out. We go to sit down to eat, and everything's fine, and maybe later on in that evening, someone goes to use the restroom, and they discover that the toilet doesn't flush, and we deal with the toilet at that point, as opposed to dealing with it, of course I had to, in this moment when we're just about to eat, and now I'm agitated because why is this happening? You know, so I was being impatient, as I've said before, as I can be. So I was impatient. I wanted to fix this toilet, but, you know, we're ready to eat, so I was agitated. I would have been in a different frame of mind 2 hours later if that raw shrimp hadn't been put in the with the rest back at the store 2 hours before. Little did my wife know that moment when the guy put the shrimp in there, and that she didn't tell him that this would have an impact 2 to 3 hours later in our home with our toilet. So how could you have put that together? When the guy puts the raw shrimp, that was the beginning of our little path toward where we are today with our toilet. It seemed like an easy mistake, an honest mistake, a mistake that wasn't all at the moment, didn't seem like it was going to be that crucial. And even at the moment, throw it down the toilet. Who cares, right? It's just a little shrimp. At any other time, any other flush, it flushes away. You don't even think about it twice. You go to eat, and you're off to the races. But with the toilet flapper being broken now, thanks, and we've discovering it at this point, right before we're going to eat, because of this raw shrimp, now we got a problem, right? Okay. So my wife sees that I'm already agitated, so she's like, okay, let me just get some of this stuff out, because she sees that I'm in now problem-solving mode. I'm not in shrimp-eating mode anymore. I'm in problem-solving mode. I got to fix this toilet because, as I said to you many times before too, I like to stock up on things. Yes, folks, believe it or not, I had an extra flapper chain ready to go in case of emergency. How about that? We had a flapper chain emergency about a year and a half or so ago. I bought 3 at the time just to be safe. So here I was prepared for a flapper chain emergency, which also gave me the confidence to say, I can fix this now because I know I have a flapper chain and I can put this together. So once again, I had planned ahead for a flapper chain emergency, and sure enough, I had one. I had an emergency, and I had a flapper chain ready to go. So I actually, at the beginning, even though I was agitated that our dinner was being disturbed and that this toilet now was an issue, I also felt confident that I was ready to solve the problem. I've done flapper chain repair in the past, and I had said flapper chain ready to go. So this should have been a very simple, quick fix, and get right back to the living room and eat your shrimp and have a nice evening. Boy, was I wrong. So my wife gets the stuff out. She goes upstairs. I said, "Could go get the flapper chain. It's upstairs in the closet there on the right." You know, I'm explaining where the flapper chain is. And while she's getting the flapper chain, it's only a half bath in the front on our first floor. So it's kind of a small room, just a toilet and a sink. So it's kind of small. And so, you know, you want to get as much of the, you know, if you're going to go into the tank, you want to get as much of the stuff around you out of there, right? So there's stuff on top of the tank lid now. Get all that out, and I got to get the tank lid. So the tank lid is still sitting in that little precarious spot. It's not tipping over. It seems to be steady and firm in there. But as I said, if you look at it, you go, "Wow, that's kind of a dangerous spot to put that." Especially there's a tile floor. So, this tank lid, because it's an old toilet, is made of porcelain, right? It's heavy, but it's still made of porcelain. So, once again, now I know I'm going to start to do some surgery on my flapper in my tank. So, you know, I might be moving around, blah, 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 you know, right over on top of it. So this is not the best, but it was an okay place to put the porcelain lid initially just to diagnose the problem. But now if I'm going to do surgery, my operating room needs to be, it needs to be utilized. It needs to be efficient. And so this porcelain lid is not really in a good spot for my operation. So I take the lid, very heavy, 10, 15 pounds, maybe more. And instead... I'm still going to be mad about this for years, decades, lifetimes. Instead of taking the lid, you know, out of the bathroom, right, and laying it on the floor or putting it on a counter in the kitchen, right, but just getting it out of the way and putting it in a safe place, because don't forget, my whole motivation for moving it was, it doesn't seem safe here. It could fall. I'm trying to prevent it from falling. So my move should have been to have taken it from this semi-risky spot and putting it into a much more guaranteed safe place, because that was my motivation. I think you can tell that I didn't do that. Instead, I leaned it, you know, put one side, the short side on the ground, and the other side, leaned it against the wall, the tile wall, I should add, of the bathroom. And so the top of the lid now, it's at an angle, long, you know, it's you know, it's sitting on the short sides, on both sides, on the short side of the lid. One short side leaning against the tile wall. Other short side on the ground leaning on the tile floor in a cramped room. Do I need to tell you what happened next? If you guessed that, of course, the lack of friction with the tile and the porcelain led this substantially weighted object, at least 10 to 15, if not 20 pounds, to slide down and fall. I can tell you, when porcelain hits tile, the result is never good. And as you would have expected, or if you have deduced, the porcelain lid cracked. I swore like Darren McGavin swears in Christmas Story when the Bumpus's hounds eat the Christmas turkey. That's the kind of swear words I was saying. Because I was so mad at myself. I was mad because I was trying to be safe. You know, I could have left the lid where it was and it probably wouldn't have fallen, but it just, why risk it, right? So in my effort to to be safe and to provide my tank lid with a safe area and trying to do the right thing, I moved it and put it into a less safe area, which proved to be disastrous. So now not only do I have a flapper problem, but now I have an even bigger problem because I have this old toilet and I have a broken toilet lid. I can get a new flapper chain, or I could get somebody to fix this if I can't fix the flapper. But now I'm going to have to find a porcelain lid for a very old toilet. And I know that is not going to be easy. So now what started off is a very simple thing. This little flapper thing broke, which is not a hard fix. Even I can do it, or so I thought. But now it's been compounded. I've got a broken toilet lid in addition to a toilet that doesn't flush. Plus, I've got a shrimp dinner that's still waiting. And all this is happening all within a 10-minute period. So now my agitation level and my anger level has risen because first the flapper got me upset and agitated, but now the broken toilet lid, I've elevated into a whole other area now of anger and agitation, and I'm more mad because I'm mad at myself for what I did, and I'm mad because I was trying to do something right and I did something stupid. I'm still tracing this back to the guy with the shrimp. If the guy doesn't put the wrong shrimp, the raw shrimp, into our shrimp, I don't have to go into that toilet at that time and try to get everything done, which I shouldn't have done, but that's me. So all, as I said before, that moment became a moment where things were going to happen because there was impatience and anger and irritation happening. If that wrong shrimp had not been put in the store 2 hours before, we wouldn't have had to go to the toilet. We would not have discovered our toilet was broke. We would have discovered it 2 hours later when things were calmer, when we had a little time, when we were a little more relaxed. We said, oh, that's terrible. Oh, okay, well, let's see what's wrong. But I was in such a rush to get that done because I wanted to get our shrimp dinner started. The domino started to fall. And I say the first domino fell when the guy put the wrong shrimp in there. And the funny thing is, when he did it, that was a harmless mistake. But it just goes to show you how that one little seemingly innocent mistake that wasn't rectified starts to unravel and the dominoes start to fall. Because of that shrimp, I now have a toilet that doesn't work, and I have a broken lid that's in pieces on the floor, and I know it's not going to be easy to replace. And so now, even if I fix the toilet, I'm going to have to now try to find this toilet lid, which is not going to be easy. So, of course, when I look into the toilet, we don't have a chain. The metal thing broke. That's not as easy to fix without my flapper chain. So now I'm going to have to get a replacement wire and loop because there's a whole different mechanism to that. Now I go online. While I'm eating the shrimp, I go online. I told you, folks, this is the way I am. While we're eating the shrimp, now, you know, the shrimp dinner is what it is. It's ruined because now I've got this broken toilet on my mind. Well, here's the best part, though. When we sit down, my wife brings the shrimp out, and I peel the shrimp, and I look at it, and I go, wait a minute. Is this shrimp cooked? Or is it raw? Now, the shell is on it, and it's red, but I peel it and I go, this shrimp is not cooked. This shrimp is raw. No wonder why it was so cheap. Not only was it not shelled, but it wasn't even cooked. So thank God we didn't eat it. I discovered that. But at the time, it looked, because it was pinkish, so we figured it was already boiled, but it wasn't. So my wife's like, okay, I'll go and boil it now. Okay. So while she's doing that, I go online now to try to find how am I going to find a top for a Gerber toilet? Who even knew Gerber made toilets, right? I thought they made baby food. A Gerber toilet, you know, model number V60. I don't even know if they make them anymore. So while she's now boiling our raw shrimp, which we thought was already boiled, I'm online looking for toilet seats. If you would have told me at 2 in the afternoon that by 7 o'clock I'd be looking for broken toilet replacements, lids, and I have a broken flapper, I would have said, what are you talking about? But here's the great irony, too, is now, here's the best part, which dawned on me as I was looking for this lid. I'm like, oh, wait a minute. You know how crazy this is? As we're replaying this, I said, you know, this all goes back to the guy giving us the raw shrimp that you had to throw out. But now the great irony is, we didn't have to throw that shrimp out initially, which would have discovered the broken flapper in the toilet, which led to the broken toilet lid, because all of our shrimp was raw. So we could have taken that extra raw shrimp that did not have a shell on it and really looked raw, and we could have boiled it with our other raw shrimp, which meant that we would have not thrown the shrimp out at that time, which meant we would have not known that our toilet flapper was broken, which meant that I would have not taken the lid off to check it at that time, which means that I would not have taken the lid and put it on the floor in a wrong spot for it to potentially break, because I would have been eating my shrimp. And we would have discovered the toilet much later in a much different frame of mind, and the toilet lid would have probably been put in a safer spot so it wouldn't have broken, and we probably would have devised a way to either fix the flapper or jerry-rig it for the time being, and everything would have been fine. But instead, that raw shrimp that we wound up having to cook, we didn't need to throw him out. We didn't need to be in this spot where we were now. But it all started with that raw shrimp, and then our lack of knowledge to know that if we would have called the guy, if we would have bought the call the guy shrimp, we wouldn't have worried about boiling shrimp and shelling shrimp, and we wouldn't have been in this spot we are, because the replacement now, I did find one online, but it's going to cost me about $60. I tried to save $12 by getting the uncooked, unpeeled shrimp, by not getting that, right? So by me trying to save $12 by getting the unshelled, uncooked shrimp instead of the nice shelled and boiled shrimp, that I would have paid $12 more for that, I'm now $48 in the hole by trying to save that 12 at 2 in the afternoon. By 7 o'clock, I'm $48 in the hole. And I now have to wait a week for this lid to come, so my toilet doesn't have a lid on it. And I'm still futzing with the flapper to get it done right until the plumber comes, because he has some other stuff to do, because, as I said, water follows us. So here we are a week later. I still don't have my toilet lid, and I'm still waiting for the plumber to come. All because I didn't want to, you know, and now that when the plumber comes, that's going to cost even more money, right? Even though he's going to do other work, but he still has to fix this. In my effort to save $12, in our effort to throw away a raw shrimp, it's going to cost me way more than the $12 that I thought I was saving. So when in doubt, whether it's buying shrimp or whether it's fixing something at your house, call the guy. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Don't forget, every Monday a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com. We are found wherever you find your favorite podcast. And don't forget, tell your friends, tell your family, send them a link, send them a message, tell them that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and your devotion and your extra effort is much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 244. I'm Jim Tarano. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, from the end of the web to your screen. Call the man.